Bibliotech delivers affordable, instant access to a continually expanding selection of books at any time on any device. Their groundbreaking search engine returns definitions, diagrams, and examples, enabling students to learn and answer assessment questions faster than ever before. Bibliotech's customers are the world's best universities, including Oxford, UCL, and Imperial. Find more information about how Bibliotech is shaping the future of education at bibliotech.com. Here's a word from Class Central, the most popular search and review site for online courses. If you've ever gone on the hunt for a great online course from a top university, then you may already know about Class Central. Class Central is the most comprehensive search engine for MOOCs and online courses. The site lists over 10,000 courses and allows you to search by subject, university, keyword, and language of instruction. With tens of thousands of user reviews, you can use Class Central to help you decide if a course is right for you. And if you're into geeking out about online learning like I am, you'll love diving into Class Central's MOOC report. The MOOC report covers everything that's going on in the MOOC space, with news, analysis, and opinions about the fascinating world of online courses. A great place to start is with Class Central's in-depth analysis of the state of MOOCs in 2017. You can find a link in our show notes. Or if you're interested in finding out which courses are ranked the highest, check out Class Central's course rankings for the month and the year, or have a look at the top 50 MOOCs of all time. And welcome to the EdTech Podcast. This week we're in conversation with Ian Dunn, Deputy Vice-Chancellor at the University of Coventry. This was one of my favourite recordings made at BET this year. Not only will you hear from one of the most progressive and arguably well-resourced universities about being equally online and offline, you'll also hear how they're focusing on student services and needs, sometimes with the use of technologies. Do let me know what you think by dropping a quick voicemail via the website at theedtechpodcast.com. Thanks also to Class Central and Bibliotech for sponsoring this episode. And this week also sees the launch of the EdTech Podcast Festival. So do go and check out theedtechpodcast.com/festival to see what we have in store and to find out why JISC, Teacher Toolkit and Southampton University are already signed up. So I'm back in the press lounge and I'm delighted to be here with Ian Dunn, who's the Deputy VC of Student Experience at the Vice-Chancellor's Office of Coventry University. So welcome, Ian.
Thank you.
You were speaking earlier today on the main stage here. So can you tell us a little bit about what you were speaking about and what you were speaking about in relation to FutureLearn as well?
I was very much the supporting act to Simon. Anyone that knows Simon Nelson will know that that's normal. Is a great innovator and creator. We are in partnership with FutureLearn, developing and delivering fully online degrees, but we actually see the partnership as much more than about delivering online degrees. It's about pedagogic change. It's about how online and on campus become one thing. A student who takes a semester on campus, life changes, takes a semester online, semester three, they may want to do, they can't come onto campus on Mondays and Tuesdays, so they do one module online and two on campus because they like the social experience. And there's no reason why that can't be possible, and we see this as a catalyst for that sort of change, educational change. So what we were talking about was how you use MOOCs or MOOC-like objects to create learning objects which can be used on campus or online, to allow a student to move through a set of content at their own pace. That doesn't mean the lecture or the tutorial or the seminar isn't there. Of course it can be. But that they engage with the content in a particular way, in a very storyboarded, narrative, gamified sort of way. And then the tutor, is very, whether that's online or on campus, is much more about the complex problem solving, how you use the content and integrate it to really learn. So not just knowing stuff, but knowing how to and why. And that's what we're doing with FutureLearn.
That's really interesting. And is that live already, or is that
it
in
is.
The planning? Okay, well.
So the first course is now live. It's a master's degree in nursing. So these are in-practice nurses. So someone who's already trained as a nurse. but now wants to develop their skills to the next level about crisis management, about whether that's within the health service sector in your own country or globally, and about disaster management and so on.
So digging into the practicalities of it. So if you're that nurse and you come into campus one day and then you think, okay, today I'm going to do some modules online. From the university's point of view, do they then have a view of, okay, they've done this offline, as it were, and this online, or
had,
so
this is about changing university approaches as well, systems and background as much as it is about pedagogy, so that it doesn't matter, you're engaging, and ultimately to see a student on campus, two online in the UK and one in Singapore or in Nigeria or in Australia, all working in a group to solve the same problem, is just where I want to get to.
Okay, that's really interesting. And how long did it take to sort of integrate that as well, to actually embed that practice and to communicate it to all of the relevant team? And
well, this is why it's a developing process. So the first one is now live. It's MSc Nursing.
Got you, yeah.
In May, we bring another six courses online, and it will be a phased approach. At the same time, we have a change management programme that sits behind this to develop all of our undergraduate and postgraduate programmes into this mode. And yes, it's a big change programme. It's not an ed tech change programme. It's a cultural change programme. And so, that's a big...
I'm quite interested in this evolution of MOOCs as well, because I saw two presentations yesterday that were talking about MOOC-type teaching and learning, essentially. And I noticed that both of them have sort of moved on to the next phase, which seems to be them also using project-based learning and mentoring as an extension of what MOOCs were.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So in an online space, I don't see the MOOC, let's call it MOOC 2.0.
Yeah.
Let's be a bit glib about this.
Yeah.
But actually taking what's really great about a MOOC, to me the great bit is about how you are forced to storyboard and to manage the learning and to test and to allow the student to test themselves as to whether they know something or not, how confident they are about it, and then to use a sort of Amazon-like approach of, you seem to have found this quite difficult, so let's feed this back in a different way so that you can test whether you're really confident about it, or you seem to find this interesting, what about going off into these areas? The opportunities of really expanding learning into other areas is so exciting.
And the peer-to-peer learning part of it as well. So
absolutely.
I love the sort of comments board and then people reaching out to one another and sort of assisting in that way
as well. Tutors in those spaces and peers in those spaces. So in the model that we've brought forward, and this is a huge investment from the university to create Coventry University Online, and the online company is a studio of instructional and educational designers, video producers, media producers, to help elevate the content to that sort of standard that engages someone. It's also about the student experience and academic advising, but it's also about tutors. And we've put in a very high ratio of tutor time to small groups of students to support the learning as they go through this process. Because it's not about just saying, we put it online and then you're on your own. Absolutely not.
Here's a login and see you in 9 months.
It's completely not about that. But it's also about saying to the student that wants to just do that, that you can engage with content. Universities aren't largely, individually, don't create all of the content of their courses. They curate it. And so this is about taking the level of curation up, recognising that we create some content, so bringing in that research-inspired teaching as well, but creating a framework within which that curation can be elevated.
And you're talking about curation, it makes me think, you know, have you always been in the university sector, or are you bringing expertise from that kind of mindset into the university?
From a personal perspective,
yes,
I'm university through and through.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I'm into my 26th year at Coventry, so university, but Coventry University.
Yeah. Well, I see you have your badge there, so.
However, I have lots of colleagues, and lots of brilliant innovators and creators.
Yeah.
And we also have a very enterprising approach. And so I think just being open and staying connected to the sector, being out there, talking to people like Simon and the whole FutureLearn team. I think annoyed Simon at a partners forum, saying it wasn't really Simon or Mark Lester who sold me, it was Matt Walton. Matt waved his arms around and leapt up and got onto a whiteboard and sketched out a sort of pedagogy vision. I love that arm waving, that sort of space to be...
Is he
creative.
The CTO there?
Yeah. And that's really, with all respect to Simon and Mark, they do fabulous.
You've annoyed him again now.
in the end, it's about education.
Yeah.
And it's not saying everything's broken at the moment, not at all. Mm-hmm. But we do need to think about how we connect with young people who are young people and older people who are not necessarily in Coventry, but are also always connected. My students on campus, the idea that we have on-campus students and online digitally connected students is a nonsense. The on-campus students are digitally connected all of the time.
Yeah.
I'm an engineer. I go into our engineering building and I'll see a group of students sitting around a terminal doing some really complex simulation. Each of them will also have a laptop where they're doing some research or writing the report. They'll also have their other device where they have social media and music.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're just dealing with all of this all of the time. So our job is now to be, not to try and keep up with them, but just to take education on into other domains and use what's available.
Well, that's what's really interesting, and that's what I was going to ask you, is that, you know, Coventry is often, especially recently, which is kind of the research that I've done very well, especially around sort of student experience, which is where I'd imagine your role fits in as well. And it sounds like some of those things that you just spoke about are perhaps part of that success, but I don't know if there's a particular secret sauce that you think that you've identified around that. But
there's nothing secret about any of this. It's really not. And that's, in a way, the exciting thing and the depressing thing about a place like this. There's lots of education technology. Everyone's got the solution to every problem.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't really, because what we need to do is to integrate. The students want one simple way of just being able to connect with each other. They come to universities because they're excited by the subject. They're excited by the opportunities that learning brings. We need to maintain that excitement. So keep it simple, give them easy access, allow them to connect with each other, with their tutors, and allow the tutors to connect and be passionate about their subject, which is really what they want to do.
And there's a lot in the press at the moment about two-year degrees, and you know that's part of it, but are you sort of seeing, I mean, what's your take on two-year degrees, and then outside of that, how else do you think universities will change?
I think two-year degrees, three-year degrees, four-year degrees is a bit of a red herring in many ways. The learning takes place at different paces for different people. I very much believe that for the more traditional 18-year-old, 19-year-old learner, going to university is not just about the courses they take.
Yeah.
Although education is, universities have to be responsible for the quality of teaching and learning, absolutely. For a 35-year-old return to learn learner, who has a family perhaps, the social experience, the whole experience is just not what it's all about. And sometimes it is about learning rapidly, working through courses in order to move on with career. And
yeah,
for them,
yeah,
2 years, there's plenty of time. I get very cross when people say, well, you know, you can't possibly do a degree in 2 years because it's all about the time of assimilation. You talk to students about those 25 weeks of downtime in summer, which most universities have, and they're not actively engaged in their learning. One or two are, and that's great, and I want to encourage more of that. I absolutely want to encourage that. I want students to go off and do some extra reading and so on. But even in the most prestigious of institutions, learning in that way doesn't happen just because we say it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
We have to create the opportunity for that. And so the idea that you can't possibly do all of the learning that comes in a three-year degree in 2 years, if you're motivated, of course you can. That's why we have brilliant learners who are 14 and 15 and 16 years of age going into universities, because they've done the learning in different ways.
And you mentioned before that you've been at the university for, say, over 20 years. Have you seen the often described change in students, where perhaps in the summer before, you know, we have all the kind of stereotypical imagery of students, and now it's talked about that they knuckle down more and they're more serious?
Yeah,
and
they are.
Yeah.
They're more serious, they're more focused on their learning, their voice is much louder, and so it should be. Fantastic. I'm delighted that the student voice is forcing, in some cases, universities to behave differently. We have to be much more responsive. That's not to pander to their every whim.
Yeah.
They don't want us to do that. They just want us to be listening to them and to be engaged with them. That's really exciting. So, yes, I see a huge change. They are more serious. They are more... I love it when I go to talk to our student reps, and almost invariably now they stand up and ask me questions and say, look, we have all this downtime. We want to do some more learning over summer. How can you facilitate that? Brilliant.
Yeah.
That's just
great.
You've
got a kind of mandate to go off and run with it. Okay, here's an interesting one. What's the purpose of the new Office for Students? And thoughts on Toby Young, etc.?
Well, I think the Toby Young thing was deeply unfortunate in so many ways for him personally, for just the way it was announced, the way it was managed, and the way in which the end came so rapidly. I mean, it just unfortunate in so many ways, and detracted from what is a very serious piece of work. The Officer Students, if we, you know, is a proper partnership between education, students, and students need to have, in my view, much more voice in the Officer Students. But absolutely the opportunity for the sector to be made much more responsive to student needs and to national requirements, but also to be able to demonstrate the wonderful, wonderful things that are going on through universities, the real value add in a cultural sense, in a social capital sense, in a individual learner sense. And so I do hope that the rather transactional conversation which is going on at the moment is elevated over the next period, so that we really have a debate about the national good that the higher education sector brings to the UK. The fact that internationally sector leading, there are really great examples in many other places, and so OFS linking internationally into great things that are going on in other parts of the world.
And are there associations like that or regulatory bodies like that internationally that...
I don't think there's anything quite like it.
Yeah.
I think this is a first.
So
is that a good first or a bad first? I don't know, but it's a first. I think there are some really brilliant people who are in the OFS. Sir Michael Barber has a great track record. You know, he has a reputation, and he'll test us. And that's only to be encouraged. Nicola Dandridge has done some really great things at UUK in leading the sector body, and now. I'm really heartened by her reaching out to students' unions and going into many universities to talk to students. That's really great.
I see a quite often retweeted statistic, and I'm never sure exactly the numbers, but essentially there being a disconnect between how university senior leadership teams perceive the student experience and then the students themselves, what they feel that they're getting in terms of the learning they need.
And the student experience, of course, is many things. It's an individual and a changing sort of thing over time. So we have the experience that we had, the experience that we're having, and the experience that we expect. And there's all sorts of ways that develops. University leadership teams do need to be much more connected. I rather proselytise on the idea of... I'm very proud of the fact in Coventry we don't have leadership team offices. We have a common space that we share and we get out and about. People find it amusing. I spend my time in coffee shops on campus, and I love to talk to students. I take students out to dinner on a regular basis. Groups of students, we go for pizza and we just have a conversation about what's going on.
Yep.
Not about the university, but about their lives, about their hopes and expectations. It's really extraordinary.
It's amazing how much pizza opens
Pizza and coffee.
Pizza and university podcast guests, because I had the head of user experience at Loughborough University Library previously on the podcast, and he was talking about how when they tried to switch the idea of the library, they allowed pizza to be brought in as a takeaway, eaten and then left there, but it meant that the students were using the library more.
Yes.
And it just reminded me of that.
My librarian will kill me for this, but he was very supportive. When we took down, or I physically, personally took down the signs that said no drinking, eating, smoking, talking, no smoking, that's a silly one, there's no smoking, course. You know, talking, and now that the students define how the space is used, the space is 24/7. Yes, you may have some mess, you may have some problems to deal with, but we'll deal with them. Mm-hmm. Actually, the students self-regulate. And I want them to be there learning, not kicked out because they want to have something to eat.
You have like a pristine library, but no one's using it.
Yeah, no one using it,
Which universities or people inspire you as innovative and impactful?
Oh, gosh. Oh, there's so many. But the Australian sector is very innovative. I'm working very closely with Deakin and Professor Beverly Oliver, who's the Deputy Vice-Chancellor at Deakin. Beverly is incredibly creative and very thoughtful, and we're working very closely together. In the UK... Gosh, naming some people. Well, Professor Sue Rigby, who's just was Deputy Vice Chancellor at Lincoln, is going to be Vice Chancellor, or has just taken up Vice Chancellor at Bath Spa University. Sue is really, really innovative. She'll be hugely embarrassed about me saying this, but there are very many people in the sector. Professor Helen Neville at Manchester Met, very creative. There are people all over the sector who are doing some amazing things.
Okay. And then final question, do universities have a place in lifelong learning? As we are, you know, I'm just thinking of things like Dr. Linda Grattan's work on how to live to 100 and needing to continually upskill, this idea of segmented life happening, university, job, you know, retirement, dissipating. So what's the university's place in that? And
The universities absolutely have a place. Yeah. But I actually made this comment just a few moments ago on the stage. Government has a place as well, and I do hope the OFS play this role. There needs to be some nudges from the sector, from the system. And lifelong learning is about national skills development, national wealth creation, and national well-being as well. I think Ian Diamond's review in Wales and the Welsh higher education system is really important. It's worth a read. Talks quite a lot about lifelong learning and creating a system that will support learners back into higher education. If the emphasis is solely on the individual and their need to upskill and their own responsibility about that, then I think that that's one-dimensional and it needs to be much more multi-dimensional. So government's place in creating a framework. I'm not saying it has to be government funding for every one of those steps, because industry has a role, the individual has a role, the universities have a role, but government has a role to create the nudge that that brings it all together, and OFS has an opportunity here.
So when you see organisations like General Assembly, does part of you think, well, we could be doing that? Or just because I'm thinking, I find it really interesting how adult education used to be quite sort of dusty and sort of boring, and now actually it's like one of the most exciting things happening, and you've got all these kind of trendy brands around it. And if I was in the university decision making capacity, I'd think like, oh, I want to be part of that.
We need to do some work also on the there is a notion that you only move in one direction along the skills ladder, this sort of qualifications framework.
Yes.
Actually, if I want to change my career and move in some, I need to accept that I have a whole range of skills from my previous background, but I may not have all the knowledge at the right levels to bring to bear into that skills framework. And so it's not just about the one directional travel through that journey. I need to recognise that personally, and therefore the system needs to recognise that I need to take a step back sometimes in order to develop my knowledge, but also bring the skills I've developed through my previous sets of journeys together. How do I do that? And universities have a place there.
So that's interesting. So it's the idea is sort of you may have five careers within a lifetime.
Yes, absolutely.
There's quite an interesting analytics piece there, isn't there? Because you can then start to identify where my gaps are and...
Yeah. And data and analytics we haven't talked about, but it's absolutely so important. We talk about customised learning. I'm not really interested in customised learning. I'm interested in personalised learning. And that doesn't mean that I have to make the learning content fit to every single learner, because that's inefficient. But I can use data and the learning journey. I can personalise that by understanding the demographic that I come from, the background that I have, my previous history of learning, and bringing all of that together to support how I navigate through those learning objects, as an individual, and that's really interesting. And the demographic point is very important, because we know that if I'm from certain backgrounds, so if I'm a commuting student, if I'm from a social background that is less affluent than others, if I'm from a certain ethnic grouping, if I'm from a certain sexual orientation, identity have impact here about access to education. Understanding all that and then being able to offer the nudges to the learner to say, look, here's someone who has a similar profile to you that who can provide some mentoring and guidance.
Yep.
Just to give you that confidence and sense of belonging that you have the right, an equal right, to achieve. Confidence is a really big thing in education.
You know, I don't want to be that person that like relates everything back to yourself, but it reminds me of when I was looking at which universities to enter. You know, Oxford University is like an amazing university, but I remember going to like one of their open days and staying overnight. And, you know, you went into the hall and I'm from the Isle of Wight, so, you know, I don't have, like, there's not a huge amount of, I suppose, other people went to a state school there who've had that experience. And there were lots of oil paintings of just sort of men smoking pipes. And I just thought, like, this place is amazing. I'd love to come back here and use your library when I'm 40. But at that point in my life, I wanted that social aspect that you mentioned. And Now I know that would have been there, but at the time it was the kind of facade that was in front of me that put me off.
If we don't have some mirroring of people like us,
then freak out.
Absolutely, it's really difficult to be confident enough to step out of it. I'm very keen on, and I haven't done this yet, and I must do it, 20, 30 seconds to straight to camera of people from across the university, students and staff and the leadership team, just expressing themselves, their difference, because we all have points that will that you don't see necessarily, because you see the persona rather than the, you know. Rod Gilbert was on, I heard an article about Rod Gilbert the comedian. He was talking about shyness. There's a TV show about to come on.
Okay.
And it doesn't matter how confident you appear in the persona you portray, we all have things in our backstory that if we could just share that, we would inspire one person.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah.
So no, I completely get
it. Well, when you do that, please share it with me, and okay. I'd like to share it to our listeners as well. Well, thank you so much.
It's a great pleasure.
Are you on Twitter?
Yes.
What's your Twitter handle if people want to?
I'm at @CovPVCStudents.
Okay, at @CovPVCStudents. So thank you so much, Ian, and a pleasure to meet you as well.
It's a great pleasure to meet you. Thank you.
This week's episode. If you're interested in co-creating EdTech and informing EdTech design, why not come along to our next meetup at Runway East in London on Monday, the April the 30th, 2018, on hiring and retaining talent, including advisory networks. All details are in the show notes, and it'd be great to have you there. If you're outside of the UK, why not set up your own listeners' meetup? And beyond April, we're looking to London Tech Week, so go and check out their programme, which will feature more EdTech content this year and runs in London 11th to the 17th of June 2018. And if that's all a bit London-centric, take a look at EduTech Africa, which doesn't take place until the 9th and 10th of October in Johannesburg. That's all for now. See you soon.